This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3, Urbana.
Greetings. It's 1 o'clock, Urbana-Champaign. I'm Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters and WILL AM 580. Today, we're here on this holiday weekend. And the big news, of course, in the world of media is the Glenn Beck Show has ended on Fox. We're going to be talking with an expert guest from Media Matters for America to talk about Glenn Beck, Fox News, and media in general. It should be a terrific hour on this holiday weekend, so please stay tuned.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
Media advocates often call for a balanced media diet, getting your news from different sources, hearing different perspectives, and making your decisions by weighing competing viewpoints. But what do you do if you live in one of the almost 80 communities across the country where media companies are quietly merging their TV newsrooms, cutting staff, and sharing news content? This kind of covert consolidation isn't supposed to happen. There are rules that protect the public from media consolidation because it results in less news and information getting to the public, and it allows one company to monopolize the debate of important public issues. Free Press has launched ChangeTheChannels.org, an initiative that calls attention to this growing problem. The website has real examples of covert consolidation and an interactive map with details about each community affected by it. Program coordinator Libby Reinisch explains that in Denver, for instance, viewers see virtually identical news being read on two different stations by two different anchors.
What's incredible about these deals is that a lot of folks that I've spoken to in Denver didn't even realize this was happening.
Because these deals don't have to be reported, it's been difficult to find information about them. ChangeTheChannels.org scoured news stories and press releases to find the 200 stations that are listed on the site. The press releases spun consolidation as good for the community, claiming they would free up resources to provide more coverage of other local stories.
Of course, that never happens in the long run. They end up, laying off journalists and really just kind of getting by with pooled coverage. In one of our recent reports, there's actually a quote from the president of one of these media companies advising fellow media companies to stop sending out press releases announcing these deals because it does more harm than good.
Part of that harm are the layoffs. 65 in Honolulu, 40 in Denver, 30 each in Peoria and Syracuse, and the list goes on. Broadcasters cry poverty, but Reinisch says that's not the case.
It's simply not true. These stations have been seeing record profits, and on top of that, what we found is when they do consolidate and lay off dozens of staff, while they may claim that they will reinvest those savings in the community and in meeting their public interest obligations, in fact, they use those savings to pad their bottom lines.
An interesting case is unfolding in an unlikely place that could affect the future of documentary filmmaking: tax court. This spring, an Arizona tax court trial caused a judge to write a statement which, if memorialized in a ruling, has filmmakers gravely concerned about the future of their craft. The trial dealt with a case in which the IRS argued that documentary filmmaker Lee Story could not deduct business expenses related to her film Smile Till It Hurts, the Up With People story, because as a documentary film, its primary purpose is to educate and expose, not to make a profit. The implication? All documentary filmmaking is a not-for-profit activity. Eddie Schmidt is the president of the board of directors for the International Documentary Association. When the IDA heard about the Story case and the back taxes that the filmmaker had been charged with, they got involved.
We can't comment on the finances of Lee Story. However, we can certainly bring a lot of evidence to show that documentary filmmaking is, by and large, in pursuit of profit. Our statement, which can be read on our website at documentary.org, basically pulls together individual statements from filmmakers like Robbie Kenner, who directed Food, Inc., Liz Garbus, who did Searching for Bobby Fischer for HBO and a number of other films. And they personally attest to their long careers, you know, making films for profit, that they wouldn't have careers if they weren't able to make money.
Schmidt explains that documentary filmmakers spend a lot of money preparing, developing, shooting, and producing a film before it is ever received by a broadcaster or a distributor.
If the judge's opinion stands, let's say, that, gee, this really looks like documentary filmmaking is a hobby, not a business, doesn't satisfy their so-called 9-point test. Well, if that were to stand, then filmmakers, all filmmakers, I guess, like Lee Story, would potentially be liable for taxes on business deductions that they made that would be considered illegitimate, because you can't take deductions on hobbies. You take business deductions on business. That would have a hugely chilling effect on career filmmakers who work in this arena, and that's many people.
The IDA's brief was accepted by the judge in the case, and the hearings will continue.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
Okey-dokey, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today, Sunday, July 3rd, 2011, here in WILL AM 580, this wonderful holiday weekend. Thank you all for taking time from your holiday weekends to join us today on Media Matters. Before we go to our guest, I want to thank you listeners very much for the extraordinary outpouring of support you showed 2 weeks ago during the pledge drive when my friend John Nichols was here and we did a special two-hour show and Bill Moyers joined us. We got, I think, 85 people who called and made pledges, and we raised $8,000+, I think $8,800. And it means everything to us. And I want to thank also at this moment Melissa Trentz, my producer, Kyle Kroha, the engineer who works the board every Sunday, people who work tirelessly for this show behind the scenes and get none of the recognition, and also Jay Pierce here at the station, who's been absolutely central to this show existing, being on the air for the last decade. This is the whole team here that makes this possible, and the most important players in the team are all of you listening. And again, thank you very much. So on to today's show, our guest today is Jeremy Holden. He's a deputy research director at Media Matters for America, the Media Watch Group out of Washington, D.C. He previously covered state government as a journalist with the Daily Reporter in Columbus, Ohio, and he has an M.A. From George Washington University in Media and Public Affairs. He has been working for Media Matters now for some time. Jeremy Holden, welcome to Media Matters.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's really a pleasure. I follow the work of your organization closely, as I suspect many of our listeners too. And you have the unenviable task sometimes of consuming a lot of media that probably many of our listeners try to avoid. And, you know, the big news, of course, this week that was covered by Media Matters for America was that Glenn Beck had his last show on Fox. And, you know, I think a lot of listeners don't watch Beck a lot, or they might be familiar with him largely through, you know, criticism of Beck, not through necessarily watching it, but some of them probably are avid viewers. What's your take, Jeremy Holden, on Glenn Beck's legacy? I mean, what do we make of his career at this point of it?
I think one of the takeaways of Glenn Beck's kind of rise and fall at Fox News is that there's a limited appetite for the type of dishonest and reckless rhetoric that became a staple of his show. And, you know, while he may have been a bit of a sensation, there was a pretty sharp and significant, really a sustained decline in his audience, in his ratings, and really in his relevance in the media landscape. And so I think kind of the positive takeaway from this is that, you know, while we had 30 months of his kind of brand of hate, it didn't work in the long run. People just didn't want to put up with that over, you know, a long term.
And Jeremy, how much of Glenn Beck's departure from Fox News was a result of his being pushed out, and how much was he just wanted to leave?
You know, that's really unclear still at this point, Bob. They, you know, Fox News, you know, Roger Ailes is on record saying half the headlines are saying that he was fired and half the headlines are saying he left, and that Fox News is happy with either of those headlines. it was a pretty prolonged and agonizing and really uncomfortable transition to watch. And, you know, they're kind of trying to really avoid any explicit recognition that this was a bad decision, any real accountability on their part, and just kind of try to move forward as best they can.
But as I get it, Jeremy, your interpretation is that Glenn Beck, his standards for truth and evidence and integrity were beneath those of Fox News.
Well, I don't know if we can say that. I think we'd like to say that. I think that he suffered. He turned out to be a bad business decision on their end. You know, he lost. There were 300 advertisers that, at the end said, we will not, we don't want anything to do with this show. Over the course of a year or so, he lost 1 million viewers. I mean, that's a business decision on Fox's end. And to the extent that advertisers and viewers decided that they didn't want anything to do with Beck's brand, that became bad for Fox and then in the end good for the American viewing public. But there are still plenty of people, of course, who are going to get paid, to be dishonest, to be reckless, to scapegoat, to fearmonger on Fox News. So I'm not ready to say that Fox News has seen the light. I think they made a business decision.
Yeah. Jeremy Holden, our guest today, senior research director person at Media Matters for America. You can learn about this organization at mediamatters.org on the website. They do comprehensive analysis of mainstream media, in particular looking at conservative media, fact-checking it and examining it closely. Media Matters, I think, in its coverage of Glenn Beck, has held up the infamous statement Glenn Beck made on one of the other Fox shows early in the Obama administration, where he said that President Obama had a deep-seated hatred for white people, and I don't know if that's an exact quote, and for white culture. And it was an astonishing thing, obviously, for him to say at a whole number of different levels. But I would, and that was the beginning of the end, but it was also the beginning of the beginning in a way, too, because that put him on the map for a lot of Americans who didn't really know much about him prior to that. And, how did Fox News cover that statement on its other programs? How did Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly or Brit Hume talk about that at all?
No, it didn't really get the level of coverage on the rest of the Fox News shows that we saw elsewhere, in terms of just kind of the shock and the appalling, the kind of visceral reaction to this appalling statement. Fox put out a statement saying that, Glenn Beck was an opinion person on the show. He voiced his opinion. He has a right to do that. It's not necessarily the opinion of Fox. Soon thereafter, Rupert Murdoch made some unfortunate comments he thought Glenn Beck was right to say what he said. It was really an awkward handling of it. Glenn Beck made some appearances on the O'Reilly Factor around that time where, it was discussed, but not that level of coverage that you saw elsewhere, in reaction to those comments.
Well, I think what's striking about that, and something that comes up on this program a great deal, and I think the Media Matters website for that matter as well, which is that there seems to be an incredible double standard in terms of moral requirements for a statement someone makes, depending on their political perspective. I remember when, during the Bush administration, the W. Bush administration, Move On had a campaign to do an ad against George W. Bush. I think it was in 2004. And so they had thousands of entries. And one of the entries, you may recall this, put a sort of Hitler-type mustache on Bush. And it wasn't done by Move On, but it was one of the many hundreds or thousands of entries. And Move On caught no end of grief for this. I think that all liberal Democrats were forced to sort of condemn Move On for even allowing something like this on the website. And they had to apologize formally. It was really quite extraordinary. Yet something like this gets, when Glenn Beck says something like this, and then there's a whole litany of other charges that are routinely made against Democrats and Obama, not to mention people who are to the left of Obama, there's never any demand that all Republicans, denounce them and, demand an, apology.
Yeah, that's I think one of the long-term issues that we're going to be dealing with in the kind of the post-Glenn Beck on Fox world, and that is this notion that it's become almost acceptable now to kind of level this Nazi Hitler attack on political opponents on the left, and Glenn Beck was certainly at the forefront of this. I mean, there are no shortage of examples of him kind of leveling this claim. And you're exactly right. There was not the same level of outrage that you saw to those Move On. The ads are not certainly not Move On ads, but that were kind of contributions to that campaign. And so, you know, you almost see him shifting, Glenn Beck's role as having shifted the dialogue really toward the fringe. And I think it's going to be challenging to continue pulling that back to a more reasoned and responsible dialogue.
Our guest today in Media Matters is Jeremy Holden from Media Matters for America, where he's a deputy research director. We're talking about Glenn Beck, his retirement, Fox News, and really anything you want to talk about in the realm of news media today, as Media Matters pretty much covers the waterfront. The telephone number here at WILL is 333-9455, 333-9455, and our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Enjoy the holiday weekend with Jeremy Holden, myself, Bob McChesney. Make a call. We'd be glad to talk with you. Jeremy, one of the things, there's many things about Glenn Beck I find interesting and striking. And I'd just like to ask you a few more questions before we move on. One of them is that he invoked routinely as sort of heroes of his from American history. He had an uncanny ability to pick people who were probably the most opposite him that you could come up with. Thomas Paine, Martin Luther King, even Orson Welles, who he named his production company after. These are people who, you know, I've studied fairly closely. I can't imagine more antithetical figures to everything Glenn Beck, you know, politically stood for than these three, yet he embraced them. What's that all about?
Well, I think it was all image. I mean, you know, one of the things that really was striking about Glenn Beck's tenure and his run on Fox was the extent to which this was the Glenn Beck show, you know, kind of Glenn Beck about Glenn Beck brought to you by Glenn Beck. And these, you know, these kind of historical, really kind of iconic historic figures became props and kind of just tools for his kind of self-aggrandizement and his efforts to try and create this megalomaniac, you know, image of himself. And so there never seemed to be this real understanding of who these people were that he was citing, and really just kind of an effort to use them as like I said, props for the, you know, to build up Glenn Beck and who he wanted himself to be in the American landscape.
Well, do you think Glenn Beck was on the level? And let me preface that question or give some background for listeners who might not know a great deal about Glenn Beck. But, you know, he grew up and initially been sort of a shock jock who had been, fairly libertarian and a strong promoter of, a relatively strong promoter of drug use and a variety of other things. And he sort of switched gears entirely. And he was such a theatrical figure, one couldn't help but wonder at a certain point how much this was acting.
Yeah, and I think you see a lot of that in you know, kind of this rise from the shock jock world and into a kind of a more a political discussion and some of the, like you said, theatrics transition over, and there becomes a blurring of the line, and I think Glenn Beck is the embodiment of that, where you know, it's tough to tell whether he bought what he was selling or whether it was just a very lucrative product for a small window of time and he was going to push it. I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because it's a really toxic message. And whether he fully believes that, you know, that Barack Obama is somehow the modern day equivalent of Hitler, and that the you know, 21st century Democratic Party is the closest we've seen to, you know, the Nazis, it doesn't matter if he believes that. The point is that he was selling it so aggressively, and, you know, there's audience members that certainly buy it, that certainly take his really kind of reckless and violent rhetoric and to kind of disastrous consequences. And then there's, again, this shifting of the dialogue and the shifting of what becomes, like, acceptable discourse that, again, we're going to have to spend a great deal of time and energy kind of trying to dial that back over the coming years.
Do you think, you know, if you look over the Fox roster, you guys study Fox a great deal at Media Matters for America, and I don't remember the exact figure, but I recall not too long ago seeing demographic data for who watches the Bill O'Reilly show. And what was striking about it was the average age was very high. I mean, this was a show that the demographics looked like for people, say, under the age of 29 or even 39 seemed awfully low by comparison. But if you got the closer you got to 70, the higher the ratings went up. And I don't know if that's accurate, if you know information on that. And the second part of that is that Glenn Beck seemed to be the youth movement of Fox. It seemed like he got people who were in their 40s and 50s.
Yeah, he definitely at the outset, he drew in a lot of folks. And I think there was this almost kind of, coming train wreck element to that of people wanting to tune in to just see, how far he was going to push it before going too far. Just looking at the ads, particularly on his show, but then even at night, the advertisers kind of look at those numbers even more closely than we do. And it's certainly, telling that you'll see a lot of commercials for, say, the Shirley Temple DVD collection.
Mm-hmm.
This is to say nothing about the Shirley Temple films, but there's
no, they're classics.
There's an audience that's interested in buying those DVDs and an audience that isn't. And so you kind of see with these commercials, and that's just one example of like what advertisers are trying to reach through Fox News. So yeah, I think I think there is a certain amount of truth to what you're saying in their demographics. I don't have specific numbers at the ready to talk about, but that's definitely the trend in their viewership.
One of the arguments that I hear about Keith Olbermann, formerly on MSNBC, now on Current TV, Rachel Maddow, Lawrence O'Donnell, both on MSNBC, Cenk Uygur has been a guest here on the show, also on MSNBC, is that they're just the liberal version of Fox, and they have the same relationship to politics that Fox has, that they are spear carriers for the Democrats and basically have a double standard, and that they're just, each of them, propagandists for their own side. Do you buy that?
I don't. I think what's missing in that that line of reasoning that we do hear quite frequently is the level of kind of, again, dishonesty and recklessness that comes out of so many of the Fox News kind of opinion leaders, and how it really kind of trickles into their, so-called hard news anchors. I just don't think you see the equivalent of the amount of, kind of use of doctored quotes, use of just, factually challenged and factually inaccurate statements. And, I think, again, telling of kind of the Fox News model is some of the memos that we've been able to obtain, the emails from the executives in the newsroom, kind of putting out the line that we know to be kind of dishonest, that we know to be misleading, that they're, encouraging people, cast doubt on climate science and climate change. When you talk about healthcare reform, talk about the government takeover of healthcare or government-run health insurance. So, nobody has shown those memos coming from, the leadership at MSNBC, but we know those memos exist at Fox News, trying to get everybody on what can only be interpreted as the party line, and I think we all know what party line that is.
Our guest today on Media Matters is Jeremy Holden, the Deputy Research Director at Media Matters for America, a same name of sorts, but a different organization altogether. And Jeremy, if I'm not mistaken, our show preceded your group by, 6 months or a year when David Brock formed Media Matters for America, and he had to add the For America because we already hogged Media Matters as the title. At least that's the urban legend going around in Champaign-Urbana.
I'm not going to challenge that.
Well, yeah, that's hopefully that won't be the weighty issue you guys are dealing with
right.
In the future. If people want to call in to talk with Jeremy Holden, the lines are open. It's a live show. The phone number here at WILL is 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. One of the things, Jeremy Holden, that I find striking, and I think you sort of alluded to it right now, is how often, almost on a daily basis, in fact, if I turn on Fox News or listen to conservative talk radio or hear major Republican politicians like Mitch McConnell or John Boehner speak, that they're always talking about, seems like, the same issue, and oftentimes using the exact same terminology and phrase. It's almost like someone's delivering talking points so they stay in sort of message, everyone in unison. Am I just not getting enough oxygen, or is there something to this?
Well, I think Rolling Stone did a great kind of graphic on this in the last 2 months or so, where they kind of took the Republican talking point of the day, and just kind of traced its development on Fox News from the early morning Fox and Friends show, and just saw how it's kind of adopted there, and then at 9 a.m. you have kind of a more news focused show, and now they're interviewing a Republican candidate who asking him to kind of tee up the softball to repeat that question, and just kind of tracing it throughout the day. And so then by 9 o'clock on Hannity, you have like kind of the barking mad anchor who's just like shouting this talking point and really kind of wondering how we're going to allow this destruction of America that Obama and the Democrats are pushing through. And it was a really interesting graphic to try and just see how these talking points do kind of start. And it works both ways. Sometimes they'll start with, Frank Luntz running a kind of a conservative message tester. So he'll be on Hannity and maybe running a message test, say like, people think public option sounds nice and easy, but if you call it a government-run health insurance, they don't like it. So then, you see a memo the next day saying, don't call it the public option, call it the government-run option. And then it just becomes the new talking point on Fox News. And then, of course, you see, Republicans on the Hill who are now calling it, the government-run health care. And so whether there's this concerted effort to sit down in a back room and agree to these terms, you can certainly see the development of this language as it kind of traces through Fox News, some of the, right-wing blogs that are out there, and at the same time, you're seeing it develop in, the kind of Republican leadership.
Well, offhand, and this might be an absurd question, but if I were to start a right-wing talk radio show on some commercial radio station somewhere in America, would there be a resource to go to every morning to sort of get the hot-button issues you're supposed to be thinking about and talking about to sort of help you along?
I sure wish there was one website where we can go and find out what the talking point of the day is.
Well, maybe maybe only available by invitation only, sort of general public.
Yeah, and I don't know that there is. I mean, there's certainly listservs and, those types of coordinated or maybe not even coordinated, but these kind of loose networks of invitation-only email lists, and there may be some of that going on. I don't know if it's as coordinated as that. It may be as simple as, kind of everybody's following each other on Twitter, everybody is reading the same blog, everybody's watching Fox News in the morning, and so it just kind of coalesces and crystallizes, the way that it does, and this is just becomes the agreed upon talking point. It may be more organic than it is organized.
One of the other things that I notice watching television news, especially say the programs on MSNBC, like Lawrence O'Donnell, Rachel Maddow, Cenk Uygur, Ed Schultz, and now Keith Olbermann, who's over at Current but formerly of MSNBC, is all of those shows spend an inordinate amount of time talking about Fox and Beck and what idiots they are and how wrong they are and factually challenged they are and propagandist they are. But when I go to Fox, they almost never talk about those shows. They're basically, it seems like they're setting the agenda, they're pitching, and MSNBC is catching.
Yeah, I think a lot of times that's true. I think part of that is because I think that's most a reflection of the extent to which Fox News is not just setting the agenda, but they're setting a dishonest agenda. And so I think one of the things that you see some of the other networks responding to is, rather than, let me start again. They start with this position of, do we either adopt this and just report on it, or at what level do we have to call this out for what it is and say this is a concerted effort to distort the conversation and make sure that, we're talking about, let's look at the debt limit increase debate that's happening and make sure that everybody's talking about this as a spending problem and not a revenue problem. Do you just try to push back on that storyline, or do you call out Fox News and say, they are lying to you by saying, X? And
our guest, Jeremy Holden, you've just been listening to the Deputy Research Director at Media Matters for America. We're talking about conservative media, Fox News in particular, also Glenn Beck, but really wide open to any discussions about media. Any questions or comments here at WILL? The phone number 333-9455. The toll-free line open at 1-800-222-9455. Again, live today, July 3rd, on this holiday weekend. Hope everyone's having a great time. And I hope you have a chance to enjoy this program. But, you know, I, getting back to this issue, Jeremy, it seems that, you know, if MSNBC and the liberal shows are spending all their time, or a significant percentage, I should say, of their time responding to what Fox News is distorting, then Fox News is dominating sort of the playlist on the other stations.
I think that's a fair criticism, and you know, it becomes a question of how do you deal with that issue. I mean, if the fact that a major cable outlet is like so clearly pushing a slanted storyline and using really some of the most you know, kind of outrageous, fringe, reckless dialogue to do so, and really doing it with just a systematic dishonesty, like how do you treat that as news and noteworthy without then really elevating it to, you know, a legitimate conversation? I'm not sure the answer to how to treat that without elevating it is.
Let's go to our phone lines now. We've got a couple of callers been waiting patiently. Let's start with line one, Champagne. You're on the air with Jeremy Holden. Yes, line one, are you there? Okie dokie. Well, let's shift gears then and try another line. Let's go to line four, Boston, Massachusetts, on the toll-free line. Are you there?
Yes. I read an account on the web by someone. The name might have been Dan Cooper, someone who claimed to have helped co-create Fox News and did a lot of their early publicity. And beside the utterly unsurprising claim that Roger Ailes is personally a bully, of the sort who likes to make fun of people's accents as a way of having a real good time. He claimed that Ailes explicitly said that news was not what they were in the business of, that it was advocacy. And I was wondering if there were any kind of corroboration of this, because the person was an obviously unsatisfied ex-employee, and just because it tells me stuff that I believe easily doesn't mean it's true.
Well, thank you very much, Line 4 from Boston. And Jeremy, if I can add on to that question, I'm not sure if you've seen this in the last 3 days, and I think it might be reported on the Media Matters website for that matter. There's a memo that's come out from Roger Ailes when he was back in the Nixon administration, wrote a lengthy memo on the need to sort of have a network news operation that would sort of be, frankly, a propaganda arm for the Republican Party. And this was written over 40 years ago.
Yeah, it was an interesting memo that did come out, and I think it does become an issue of intent at that point, the intention of Fox News. You know, for us, and I think one of the bigger issues beyond the intention is the message itself. You know, the content is what viewers are seeing, and I think going back to our conversation about Glenn Beck, and certainly this memo that's been put out there. You know, the issue of what is the intention of having the message the way that it is, and that's certainly an interesting question and one that we're going to continue to look into. But you know, our main focus going forward will continue to be the content and the content that goes out to the viewers on this channel that is passing itself off as a news organization, but certainly not always acting, and certainly not usually acting as a news organization. So it becomes an issue of focusing resources on the intention of the actors versus the content of the message that they're putting out there.
How successful has Fox News been, Jeremy Holden, over the course of its history in terms of doing what Roger Ailes said we needed to have done in the 1970s, which is have a, you know, really change the whole discussion of politics in a way that, you know, would have been much harder in the 80s or 90s with a major news channel that sort of is highly partisan and sets the terms of debate no matter what. And is, it seems at a certain level, this is one of the really crucial developments in American politics.
Yeah, definitely. I think in the last, you know, 15 years since Fox News has come on, I think they've been successful in kind of changing the way that people consider the terms fair and balanced. And there was an interesting debate going back and forth between Chris Wallace, who's one of the news guys over at Fox, and Jon Stewart over the last few weeks, where, you know, during an interview, Chris Wallace said to Jon Stewart that, you know, you see you know, what Fox perceives as liberal bias on other channels, and he says, we're fair and balanced, we show the other side. And so, I think people look at this branding tool of fair and balanced and think like, oh, we're presenting both sides, but they don't really conceptualize it that way. They, you know, I think that fair and balanced somewhat means that we're, you know, going to try and slant that needle to the right because of this perceived liberal bias that they, you know, claim exists throughout the media.
Jeremy Holden, our guest, the Senior Research Director at Media Matters for America. We're talking about news, media, politics. The phone lines are open at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. I'm Bob McChesney. I'm your host. We're coming to you live today, July 3rd, 2011. When I go to the website, Media Matters for America, or when I get your email alerts, which I think I get on a daily basis, Jeremy Holden, what happens is that the focus is on Fox. It's on conservative media as a rule, though not exclusively. But it does lend one to think, in your view, or not necessarily you personally, or it could be the organization, are the rest of the media pretty much doing a pretty good job of covering politics accurately and effectively? And Fox and Rush Limbaugh and that crowd are sort of the aberration that are sort of soiling the waters. Or is there a deeper, more fundamental problem?
Well, I think there's so many great points to be made in addressing a question like that.
And we're a long show, so go for it.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you can talk about this focus on horse race coverage and who's winning the day versus what are the implications of the policies that each side are pursuing. I think you see concerns with too much focus on who's winning and losing the debate versus what are the effects of this debate on the American people. Focusing on who's going to win an election that's 18 months down the road as opposed to what are the implications of whether we don't increase the debt limit, whether we cut spending too much. Those issues, I think, permeate the media discourse, beyond any one channel. But our mission is to highlight conservative misinformation in the media, pointing out the extent to which, media news organizations are helping the conservative movement set the agenda and push forward its policies. And again, using kind of this reckless rhetoric and kind of dishonest discourse to do so. And that is certainly keeps us plenty busy. But again, that just addresses one issue in the broader media landscape. It happens to be the issue that we're focused on combating at this point.
One of the big stories that's come out in the last couple of weeks on conservative media has been, for lack of a better term, Jeremy Holden, what's a payola scandal, in which conservative groups have paid more or less surreptitiously people like Michael Levine and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck to use their airtime to promote their group's causes and their group's work to give it publicity. And you're familiar with this, I assume.
Yes.
And could you talk a little bit about that? Because I don't think this got very much play in the news media, so I suspect many of my listeners aren't familiar with this story, which is frankly quite striking.
Sure. You have these think tanks and these organizations that are, putting out white papers, putting out, their studies on the effects of certain policies. They are advertisers and on, Rush Limbaugh's show, on Glenn Beck's radio show, on some of these other shows. A lot of times it's very clear that, Rush is going into a commercial. He, touts the Heritage Foundation, touts whomever as a sponsor. But then the question becomes at other times where they are just touting the study in the middle of the show, like while just talking about the day's news, but not disclosing that this is a paid spot on the show, that we're touting this, we're getting paid for it. So, you have this added incentive beyond an ideological one to tout these kind of politically slanted studies.
Jeremy Holden, do you think that, I get from my conservative students and friends and colleagues, and just generally I get emails and phone calls periodically at this point, they say, Bob McChesney, hey, pal, you've on your show, you talk about problems with conservative media, hypocrisy, double standards. Well, doesn't the liberal Daily Kos world, Move On world, have a double standard too. When Bush was in power and his foreign policy was criticized routinely by liberals, and now Obama's in power doing oftentimes very much similar things, not a great deal of change in direction. And the same groups that were screaming when George Bush would invade a country or defend torture are completely quiet. Is that, do you think that's an issue of principle there?
Well, I certainly think that to the extent that that dishonesty does not belong to any one political organization or any one political movement, it becomes an issue to highlight it where it exists. But, you know, again, our mission is to highlight it, you know, when it's done by conservatives. That's our mission statement. That is, you know, what we let everybody know that we're doing. And so, you know, to the extent if somebody comes up with examples of, you know, a left-wing bias or some type of, you know, dishonesty or recklessness, whether it's at, you know, pick the blog, pick the news network, and that's highlighted, there of course should be accountability for it. It happens to not be the role that we fill in this landscape.
Who plays that role?
You know, there are organizations that look out and that come at this from a conservative angle. You know, the Media Research Center is one that comes to mind.
No, actually, I'm not thinking about partisan groups that basically only look at the other side but don't look at themselves. Are there groups that actually have the same yardstick for everyone in their media analysis and look at everyone?
Well, I definitely think that you look at something like PolitiFact, which is, you know, won a Pulitzer Prize, and I think they really try to come at this from a down-the-middle, just-the-facts position.
Well, it's not even necessarily down-the-middle, though. I guess I'm making myself clear. I don't think – just strip the partisanship out, say if someone tortures, it's wrong, and that could be a liberal, a conservative, and they hold all politicians and media to that standard. That's what I mean, rather than torture is okay if my party does it but not the other party. And it's not like a left-right issue. It's just like a right-wrong. Is there anyone doing that sort of media analysis?
Well, I think some of the media analysis, a lot of that media analysis you get is going to look at the hypocrisy and not really take on the position of whether it's right or wrong, whether, you know, to take your example of torture, not to say like torture is wrong no matter how you do it. There are certainly ideological organizations that are going to try and make that point to their credit. A lot of the media criticism organizations, however, are going to look at it and say, you know, that, you know, politician X, news organization Y, that is now, you know, cheering this position previously was opposed to it, or that previously strongly opposed torture is now kind of turning a blind eye. They'll try to point out that hypocrisy.
Yeah, Jeremy, let me stop here, because I guess I may be more clear even than I was. It strikes me that liberals and progressives and left sort of shading outward, there is sort of a divide at this issue. And we saw almost a shouting match between David Sirota, the radio host and author, and Ed Schultz on this about 2 months ago, where Ed Schultz just, you know, David Sirota said basically we have to hold Obama to the same standards we did Bush in terms of whether he invades countries legally. We would yell if Bush did it, and if Obama does it, we have to stand up on principle. And Ed Schultz said, no, you know, we can't go against our guy. You know, he's our guy. If we go against him, we're just undermining his ability to do all the other good things we like. I mean, it's a very important question. And it seems like that seems to be a split there, at least in that conversation, and I've seen it elsewhere. And in that split, I guess you're on the Ed Schultz side of the fence?
Well, you know, it's we are in the position in a debate like that of trying to determine what, you know, again, going back to our mission and what we say we're doing is how does one of these become conservative misinformation, and what is our role in highlighting it as like a conservative a piece of conservative misinformation. I guess that's where we come down, not really deciding one way or...
You're staying out of that one, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I mean,
that
is something that we would, for the most part, stay out of. You know, when we saw the torture debate come down, you know, after the bin Laden operation, was, you know, folks trying to say, like, that this proves torture worked. And for us to look at it factually and say, like, there's plenty of people who are saying that there's actually no evidence. There's no evidence that but for torture, this would have never been successful. And so that's kind of where our role comes in, to look into kind of the facts behind what some of these claims are and say, like, you know, you can't say that this proves torture worked when there's no evidence to support that, and there's plenty of evidence to actually say, no, it really didn't.
Our guest today, Jeremy Holden, the Deputy Research Director at Media Matters for America. Phone lines are open at 333-9455 or toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to a caller who's been waiting very patiently. Line 1, Urbana, you're on the air with Jeremy Holden.
Hi. This is not all directly related to what you've been talking about, but there are a couple of words that really irritate me. One is that referring to religious issues as social issues, gay rights and abortion and so forth, are religious. And I wish people would use that term. I think it would help to clarify things quite a bit. The other one that bothers me, and probably there's nothing anything can do about it, is the use of the word conservative for people who do not conserve anything. My dad was a conservationist, and he did, in fact, conserve farmland and things, the valuable resources. So I just wanted to get that said. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Any comments, Jeremy?
Well, I think there's certainly it's a great point that that words take on meanings that, you know, may not be fully descriptive of what we're implying. And I think that's one of the things, you know, we have to pick and choose our battles. I don't think anybody is going to change the meaning of the word conservative in the political context anytime soon. And I think, you know, fighting over what is religious and what is social is maybe a longer-term fight that would kind of take resources away from some of the political and media framing battles that are happening in the short to medium term.
Jeremy Holden, you consume a lot of Fox News and conservative media as a part of your job as Deputy Research Director at Media Matters for America. If you were forced to spend time with one conservative journalist or media personality that you deal with in the course of your work, who do you respect the most? Who do you think has the most integrity, the most, the most to say of value?
Well, that's a really great question, because so many times we will get stuck in the position and almost kind of an adversarial, or, you know, you're all constantly questioning what the folks you're watching are saying. So, in terms of respect for somebody, I think that I may go back to Chris Wallace, who is the Fox News Sunday anchor. I think that he's in a very interesting position as kind of one of the news leaders at an organization that very rarely acts as a news organization, and I'd be really interested to hear his thoughts on kind of balancing that tension between a network that is so recognized by the faces of Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, and then his role to try and portray himself as the news side of that. I think would be a fascinating conversation.
Our guest today, Jeremy Holden from Media Matters for America, where he's Senior Research Director. Let's go now to our phone lines again, to the toll-free line. Line 4, New York, New York. You're on the air with Jeremy Holden.
Thanks. I wanted to relay two things that Bobby Kennedy mentioned on Tavis Smiley a couple weeks ago and get your comments. The first was, he mentioned that Fox News is not able to essentially break into Canada because they still have laws that essentially say you're not allowed to lie on television. And I bring this up just because, you know, what we call the Fairness Doctrine, but in essence was any sort of public service mandate from the FCC, has not only, you know, not been observed for a while now, but the Republicans have pushed to actually strip it out of the books altogether, you know, a story that's basically been ignored by all the corporate media. And the second point he made was that Air America essentially failed not because it wasn't popular or that it wasn't able to actually beat other radio programs, conservative radio programs in the same markets, but that it couldn't attract corporate advertisers because of the nature of the content. And so what I'm wondering is how do you see, rather than a right-left ideology that we see on MSNBC and Fox, how much does it really speak to just a pro-corporate ideology on both sides and just, you know, basically entertainment television that serves that end so that stories like, you know, the Fukushima disaster or even, you know, the ongoing wars are essentially washed away by both and instead they just point to each other and are almost complicit in a, you know, a Harlem Globetrotters, Washington Generals type of scenario. So I'd love to get your comments on those two topics.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Jeremy Holden?
Yeah, I think those are some great points, and I think that there are some really good organizations that are out there kind of fighting the policy battles in terms of our, you know, kind of the corporate media landscape and ways to try and, you know, kind of improve upon that. One of the things that I think we've seen going back to our conversation with Glenn Beck was the success of a prolonged and persistent advertiser and viewership awareness campaign to really shed light and try to change the cost of doing business when that business is inspired by hate speech, when it's inspired by recklessness and dishonesty, and really kind of shift the cost of that and highlight it and ask advertisers, is this language what you want to sponsor? So, you know, while those debates are happening, you know, kind of on how we structure our media landscape, you know, I think there's a lot of success being happened on the ground in terms of like highlighting some of the content that maybe should be out of bounds, or at least asking those who are working in the corporate media field like to where they want to draw those bounds and where they want to kind of draw that line and say, no, you've crossed it.
It seems like, Jeremy Holden, one of the new names that's emerged as a rising star of the conservative blogosphere, media sphere, is Andrew Breitbart. And I was wondering if you could just give me a little background on him for listeners who might not be too familiar with him, and then your take on Andrew Breitbart today.
So, yeah, Andrew Breitbart kind of had a pretty interesting rise. He's connected with some of the folks who founded Huffington Post, branched out from there to start kind of his own online media empire, and really had his first brush with fame and kind of his landing in the more mainstream media with the Acorn sting operations. And of course, with that, we saw a lot of the what we would come to know and associate with him, which was just this kind of outright distortion.
Let's be clear on the Acorn sting. I mean, this was a, if I understand it correct, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this was a story that put together by Breitbart and some other amateur conservative journalists who doctored or edited videotape to give an extremely misleading impression about Acorn that then led to the group basically being defunded by Congress and going out of business. So it had tremendous effect on what was a fraudulent story.
It really was a fraudulent story, and I think, you know, Andrew Breitbart said at the time that all of these kind of fraudulent Acorn tapes are coming up that part of his approach to getting these into the news cycle was to withhold relevant information from the media and get them to play the tapes, so to kind of really kind of set the narrative early on and make it that much more difficult to set the record straight. I think we've seen that time and again as he's put these out there.
No, why wasn't that a career killer? I mean, why doesn't, you know, in academia, if a scholar did that, that ends your career. I mean, case closed. You're done, pal. In law, if you, you know, do something like that, I think you'd be, well, maybe not in law. I shouldn't go that far.
Yeah, and I think the fact that he still gets, you know, he was on Fox News yesterday. He's been on news channels throughout the week, and I think you look and see really even after Acorn with the Shirley Sherrod, just the outright disaster, just the complete dishonesty in the way that he kind of rolled that out there. And yet he's still treated as somebody who has credibility in the media. It's a real problem, and I really don't know what the answer is, except to continue to highlight kind of his dishonest tactics.
And then there are some names we've already alluded to briefly, but who are really the Mount Rushmore of conservative media in terms of sort of popular awareness and consumption. And just maybe give you their names and let you say a few words about them as one who studied them, maybe some insights about these people that you've learned or the people at Media Matters have. Let's start with Sean Hannity, who's sort of the poster child of Fox News and is convinced that Obama's a Marxist. What can you tell us about Sean Hannity?
Oh, well, I mean, Sean Hannity seems like really more than any of the others a foot soldier of, like, the movement Republicans. And I think one of the real telling moments, he did this story, this big special on liberal bias in the media. And, you know, we were sitting here watching it, and, you know, I told some of our researchers, run all of these quotes, you know, and find the true context. And, like, time and time again. So the idea was he was showing, I think it was Anderson Cooper, and how much his, like, bias on air about Ronald Reagan. And, you look at the quote, and Anderson Cooper wasn't, you know, criticizing Ronald Reagan at all. He was talking about things that other people had said. And, you know, Howard Kurtz called this a slam dunk case of deceptive editing. And that's what you see with Sean Hannity. Like, anything that is going to serve the Republican movement, no matter how dishonest or deceptive it is, he's going to try and push that out there.
Now, on the other side of the coin, I guess with Glenn Beck coming in, Bill O'Reilly's become sort of the moderate voice at Fox. What's your take on O'Reilly?
Yeah, it's been a really shocking development over the past, like, you know, 2 years or so, 2.5 years. But of course, after it was announced that Glenn Beck would be leaving Fox, we started to see O'Reilly kind of really embrace some of the conspiracy theories of Beck, and really kind of, like, kind of, you started to see, you know, that transition back to kind of reclaim his role. It will be very interesting to see what his position is at Fox going forward in terms of, like, really shaping the right-wing messaging agenda.
You know, one of the things that Beck, I think, did for Fox and for O'Reilly and Hannity was he made them sort of look centrist by comparison, sort of mainstreamed what had been very right-wing partisan stuff to make it look the more moderate voice. And sometimes I drive around the country. I do a lot of driving, in fact, and I listen to AM radio a lot. And periodically I'll hear talk shows that are nationally broadcast that don't get as much recognition because they're not on TV, so you don't talk about them as much. They're not, you know, they can't be TiVo'd and reviewed as easily. But a couple of talk show hosts, Michael Savage, and I think his name is Michael Levine, something Levine, and they're all over Central Illinois. And I don't know if you guys track these guys, but they literally make Glenn Beck look like Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, the radio world, or the kind of the right-wing radio world, and I think you could kind of throw Neil Bortz in there, who gave us a gem a couple weeks ago saying that there needed to be more dead thugs, yo, in the streets of Atlanta. Just really outrageous comments. And, yeah, you see that throughout this kind of infrastructure, and it will be interesting to see whether any of these voices become amplified now that there is that hole that exists for a short period of time that Glenn Beck leaves behind. Although, let's be clear, he's still going to have 3 hours every day on the radio, and he still has a subscription-based web channel. So Glenn Beck's not going away. He's just leaving Fox News and losing quite a bit of his kind of his megaphone.
Jeremy Holden, I hear the band tuning up in the background. Geez, they want us to start moseying out of the studio. Can you just real quickly tell listeners where they can learn more about Media Matters for America?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Our website is at mediamatters.org. Come by, check us out, and see some of our fact checks and some of our efforts to kind of educate folks on what's happening to push the conservative agenda in the mainstream and right-wing media.
Thank you very much, Jeremy Holden, for joining us today in Media Matters. I'm Bob McChesney. Dear listeners, thank you for listening. I want to thank Melissa Trentz, my producer, Kyle Croha, the engineer. We'll be back in 167 hours with Ali Pariser to talk about his new book. It should be a great show. Until then, have a great summer week, everyone.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance. Private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events. Lessons for singles or couples, beginners or advanced of all ages. Information at 378-4601 or on your web, search at Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance.
Mostly sunny today with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. A high of around 88 with light northeast winds. Partly cloudy tonight, the low of 65. Winds will be light out of the northeast again. And for the 4th of July, mostly sunny. Tomorrow's high 85. Winds will be light out of the east. Monday night, partly cloudy, the low of 65 degrees. Then on Tuesday, mostly sunny and a high in the upper 80s. This is